Gonna be a fun one tonight, folks. Welcome back, STM Live. My name is Aaron, and I am your host. This is the weekly show where we sit down with a member of the STM crew and talk about what's going on in the world of Bigfoot and UFOs and other things that we over here at Small Town Monsters do so enjoy putting out there for you guys to watch. A big hello to all of our returning viewers tonight. I do see Sandra is here from right on the edge of the Bridgewater Triangle. So that's pretty cool. Had to shout that out. Very exciting to be near the Bridgewater Triangle. I think it's exciting. We've got a great show tonight, guys. Just like every week, we are back with Mr. Alex Petikov, who I know you guys love, but a couple of announcements, a couple of things to put a bug in your ear about. I've met this a couple of times. I'll probably stop talking about it pretty soon, but Hunting Grounds, Dogmen of the Lakes, is now available. I always feel weird talking about things that I helped make. I wrote this. But what I would like to say is that this book features interviews with people like Jesse and Joe Doyle of Hellbent Holler, Mr. Alex Petikov, tonight's guest, Mr. Martin Groves, Elijah Henderson, a bunch of really cool people are in there. So if you like those folks, you know, check it out. I think you might enjoy it. American Werewolves 2, Skinwalkers, is now available on Blu-ray and VOD. And if you've seen the film, be sure to leave it a review. That always helps us get it in front of more people. And speaking of getting in front of people, totally botched that sentence, you can get in front of the whole STM crew and a bunch of guests. That was terrible, guys. I'm sorry. Bad joke. I don't even know what that was supposed to be. On June 28th and 9th, downtown Canton, Ohio, at the Doubletree by Hilton and the Paramount Theater, where we will be showing Cursed Waters, Creature of Lake Okanagan. So don't miss that. Come join us. Come hang out with us. Hanging out, you can see a new episode of The Lore You Know featuring Micah Hanks on your podcasting platform of choice. And you can see the video version on YouTube right here where you are right now. One last announcement tonight, guys. If I can figure out how to string a sentence together, this is kind of a surprise. We weren't expecting to announce this because we weren't expecting it to happen, but the marketing campaign starts right now. Cryptid, the Chupacabra, is going into wide release very, very soon. Keep an eye on our social media feed for more details. This film was created by four the Kickstarter backers of our 2023 campaign, and it was meant to remain an exclusive for a little bit longer due to some distribution issues that are not fun to talk about and wouldn't be interesting. It's going to be out sooner, so kind of a weird thing because we weren't expecting that, but we're very, very excited to share Cryptid Chupacabra with all of you very, very soon. Watch this space for updates. Okay, that's enough for me. I'm sure you guys are over it by now. Please welcome back to the STM Live stage my friend and colleague, Mr. Alex Petikov. Hey, buddy.
How's it going, man?
Good. That was a lot of announcements. I was like, I'm going to mess this up somewhere. I'm gonna mess this up.
And no, you did a good job. Like you said, it is a lot at once, so you did a good job recapping it all.
It is. Thank you. I didn't even talk about the new episode of Road to Discovery that came out today for squad members. So, but that's okay. I mentioned it just now. Speaking of squad members, we have two new squad members to shout out tonight. Luke Danuk and Sailfish, right? And
both cool names, like, actually.
Both cool names. Yeah, Luke Danuk and Sailfish. Sounds like a crime-fighting team.
Yeah, that's a good... They probably did that in conjunction. That's a... Can't be a coincidence, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I love it. If you guys are still here watching, we see you. We love it. Love it. You win usernames of the night. Usually doesn't go to two people.
Yeah, that's pretty good, yeah.
Love it. Yeah, I spend all night talking usernames. Oh, Bear County Bigfoot's here. What's up, Rod? Good to see you, buddy.
Yeah, I see there's a bunch of cool people in the chat. We got Scott.
Scott's
here. Ryan and Chewy. Yeah, they're starting the Fear the Beard chant. Fear the Beard.
I'm afraid of his beard. Every time I see him, I'm like,
It doesn't bite. It doesn't bite, guys.
It scares me. Funny, I'm intimidated.
I was actually at the dentist today, and they like ripped a few hairs out while I was, while they were like cleaning and stuff. And I recoiled in pain for a moment, you know, because it's unexpected. It's like somebody yanks a hair out. So I was fearing the beard today for sure.
Fear the beard means many things.
Yes.
Well, anyway, by now everybody's asking why we're not talking Bigfoot. So let's talk Bigfoot. I'm excited for this one because I grew up in Central Florida And I didn't get super into the cryptid Bigfoot stuff until the last few years. But growing up as a kid in Florida, I heard people mention the skunk ape. And I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. But now I do. So we're going to talk skunk ape tonight. And I'm pretty stoked about it. But before we get in the weeds, literally, like you guys did, this was not your first research trip to Florida. Like, you've been there before. So can you give us kind of a brief history of led up to this particular episode?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've done quite a few Beyond the Trail specifically episodes in Florida. I mean, this was like the third year in a row. I believe we went early 2022. We had this crazy road trip from basically Miami to Atlanta, and we hit a lot of stuff in between, but most of it was Florida. So we went to the Everglades, we went to the Green Swamp, the Ocala National Forest, as well as the Florida Panhandle, kind of that Apalachicola forest area. And then while we were there, you know, we were linking up with people along the way, people that I knew from online, other fellow Bigfoot researchers and that kind of thing. So while we were in the Green Swamp, we linked up with my buddy Matt Larson of a YouTube channel called Central Florida Bigfoot. He's somebody I got to know a few years ago, and we've kept in touch. He's a great researcher. I think he's very innovative, and I think he's very skeptical and critical of alleged evidence. And, you know, he kind of is a researcher akin to myself, as I like to see it, you know, has a very high standard for alleged evidence and is not quick to jump on, say, oh, this is definitely Bigfoot. So we linked up with him back then. We went to an area in the Green Swamp, and it's just such a massive area. And in the time since then, Matt has been working this area called the Corridor, which is basically a 1 to 2 mile wide area that links to the Green Swamp. That is like a choke point type environment. The idea he went in, I think, is a 3 or 4 year project where he's focused on that area, try to say, okay, let's see if there's anything going on here. If there are creatures like this in Florida, if they do exist, logically they'd have to move through these kind of corridors just like the other animals would. So full credit goes to Matt for basically this episode. I mean, he put the expedition, or I don't want to call it expedition, kind of camp out, get together. He put that all together.
By definition, it was an expedition.
Yeah, yeah. But it was, as we joked around in the video, we were a few miles from a Publix, which sounds very, you know, deceptive, because it's like we're not really in some deep wilderness, but Florida is one of those states where it goes from brand new subdivision to swamp where there's panthers and alligators and black bears running around among
literally on the same block.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. That's something I realized quickly while going to Florida, really sparked my interest in, say, the Florida panther down, especially in the Everglades, and how they are seen more in the suburbs than they are in the wilderness. Cause you know, you're out in the woods, it's rare to see an animal in general. Unless you're lucky, of course. So yeah. So basically what had happened was this past March, I have to think back to, you know, this trip, cause this was like 2 trips ago for me now at this point, early March, when I went down to Florida for just about 3 or 4 days. I got to link up with so many fantastic people that I know and really have enjoyed going out in the woods with before, whether they've been in our videos or not. People like Mike Ann of Tactical Bigfoot Research. He's in the video. He does an awesome presentation. My buddy Brian Garvey, who's in the chat right now, he's Brian and Chewy Go Hiking. He's somebody I've gotten to know over the past few years. He lives up here in the Northeast. So, you know, we become good friends and we go out regularly. He's in he's been in a bunch of STM videos in Beyond the Trail stuff. There's Brian. He started the Fear of the Beard stuff. Brian's an awesome dude. Just lots of other folks, you know, that I got to meet and link up with, people that I knew. And that was just a cool thought experiment that kind of wrecked, because nobody's really doing that sort of stuff anymore, where you have, say, a choke point or a bottleneck, right, where you have a smaller area to deal with and you just have teams out there spread out, teams of two. And Matt was trying to do track us, so he wanted to have 12 teams out of two basically out in the swamp, and we had, you know, a couple dozen people out there. So it was just a cool idea, and if nothing happens, nothing happens. I mean, that obviously is most of the time when you're out Bigfooting. But it was just even a social experiment. He brought together people with varying beliefs and investigation techniques. You got people that are super skeptical scientific types, people that are more paranormal. You kind of had a mix. So it was just a big fun camp out, and we had a really great time in general. So, you know, props to Matt, of course. Go check out Central Florida Bigfoot. He has a lot more videos on this, and he will be doing some kind of a video wrap up, I think, next year about his like 4-year journey into the Bigfoot subject in Florida. And this corridor expedition trip will be kind of the crescendo, I suppose, to that culmination. So that was kind of it was like a call to action, and you saw how many people answered that call. That was basically how it all kind of came together, which was fun, because you're with a lot of people, like-minded folks, people, you know, we're having debates about different topics during the day. You know, there's a pretty awesome Patterson-Gimlin film debate that happened, just like a lot of fun stuff. So, and what's really cool is a lot of people there were filmmakers as well. So there's multiple videos of that outing. Brian has already put one out. I obviously, this was my take. There was a guy named Eric Swanson there who has a YouTube channel. He does a lot of videos on a lot of different topics, and he's got, I think, 130 something thousand subscribers. So he's gotten into the Bigfoot topic the last few years, but he focuses more on the people side, the investigators, the witnesses. So his film is going to be about the people that were there and what they were up to. So there's different takes from this one trip, which I think is really cool. The kind of collaborative sort of thing, you know, we've done it a couple times before with Bluff Creek. We went to Bluff Creek a few years ago, and this was kind of in the same vein, where you had lots of different people together that are each kind of doing their own research and their own sort of films about it too.
That's what was so cool. Just the whole vibe of this episode of like very Avengers Assemble presentation, which I loved. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah. And like talking about wildlife and stuff in Florida, I had alligators in my yard a few times when I lived there.
Right.
That's a funny anecdote, but that's a true fact. Like the wildlife is very much interwoven with human development, and it's not uncommon at all. Like we had snake in our house, we had raccoons in our garage. Like that's just something you live with in Florida. So, and I'm going to explain what the skunk ape. Sorry, no, go ahead. That's the next thing.
No. I was just going to say, I think I talked about in the video how you've got Florida's population has been booming, especially the last few years. You're getting millions and millions of more people. So what's happening is these developments are encroaching in these wild places. So that is going to infect the local wildlife, of course. And if skunk ape does exist, some kind of Sasquatch-like creature lives in Florida, which is, you know, it's a question. It's obviously not proven. Logically, if it is some kind of a biological reality, it would have to also be affected by the same things affecting the black bears or the Florida panthers or the alligators or the deer or whatever other critters are out there, which there are obviously a lot of in Florida. So, again, the video was a little bit of a, you know, classic call to arms, a little bit of a social experiment. See what happens, what doesn't happen, and just kind of like I don't want to say a grid search, but in that vein, you know, just get a lot of people out there and just search and kind of see what happens.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool. Looking at the comments from our viewers, I can see people feel the same way. I meant to say this at the jump, guys, but any questions, any comments you have, please do drop them in the chat, as some of you are. A couple of really cool questions I definitely want to make sure I get to, because the audience is smarter than me. Well, this is a comment that I like, not a question, but Campfire Steve says, howdy from the Florida Skunk Ape Researchers of Tampa Bay. At least me far, I run the ECT account and order our club's tees and hats. Super cool. So check out Florida Skunk Ape Researchers of Tampa Bay. I have family from Clearwater, Steve, so I see you. You're my people. J.E. Roberts says, sorry about the beard yanks, Alex.
It's J.E. Part Roberts of, yeah, always part of the job.
Always sending the support. Yeah, it comes with the territory. Christina says, I got to see Alex in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, the Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Conference. I love watching small town videos. Well, thank you, Christine, for watching our videos.
Yeah.
See Alex again this year at the Smoky Mountain Bigfoot Conference, I believe.
We'll be there. Yes, okay. Yes. Yeah, I believe most of us are going to be there. Yeah. So,
yeah. I think it's like an all hand deck thing. So yeah, come see us again, Christine. We'll be hanging out. Let's see. Brilliant design, ! Heck yeah. Says from Montana, listening in, no idea what Skunk Ape is. We're going to talk about that brilliant design, ! So I'm glad you mentioned that, because some people do get kind of confused when we're talking Skunk Ape, and this is a big show. And that's a question we have from our squad member, Michael Tovar. Alex, in your opinion, is a Skunk Ape a Sasquatch or another type of cryptid? So now that I've tied all those comments together, what is a
Skunk Ape? In my opinion, I would imagine it's the same type of a creature as a Sasquatch, whatever Sasquatches are. Sasquatch, Bigfoot, you have different names in different places. Regionally, obviously all across areas where these things are seen. Florida has had a long-standing tradition going back decades and decades of what they've called the skunk ape down there. I think the origin, and I could be wrong, but it had to do partially with the smell, but also some of the sightings that had happened were it had white stripes on it, so they thought it looked like a skunk with the black fur and the white kind of on it. I don't know. There may be a little bit of both to that kind of origin. But you know, there's newspaper articles going back to the 60s and 70s talking about in the outskirts of Miami, the Everglades, skunk ape sightings. And they kind of, that's what people called it. Kind of, it was their version of a Bigfoot sort of thing. So, I mean, a lot of people think maybe it's something else, but I think it's probably just a regional kind of variation to maybe something like a Sasquatch, if they do exist in that area. That's the way I kind of see it. People can disagree, but yeah, so it's interesting. And again, we've done so many videos at this point about the Florida stuff. We've got a whole bunch. If you look at the Beyond the Trail stuff going back to 2022, there's a bunch of skunk ape stuff and there's a lot of reports. There's a lot of history in those actual videos. We talk about kind of the origins. Yeah, skunk ape is interesting. You have swamp apes, wood boogers, lots of different names in the South. Then obviously some stuff on the Honey Island swamp monster as well, which is kind of just like a swamp dwelling Sasquatch. So similar to skunk ape, basically, at least in the way the stories go and kind of the eyewitness encounters are pretty consistent with some of the Bigfoot stuff you'd find really anywhere else. I mean, you can take reports from Florida or Louisiana and match them up with reports from Oregon or West Virginia or Alaska. I mean, there's similarities. Yeah, there's some maybe a little bit nuances, but I would guess it's the same creature or regional variation.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So and you have to look to kind of the geographical backdrop, because if we're talking about the 60s and 70s, Florida was not nearly as developed at that time as it was.
That's
now.
A great point.
Before Disney came along and got really big, places like Celebration did not exist. There are whole towns and cities that were set up because Disney and the other theme parks came in and brought this massive influx. So a lot of Orlando and what's around Orlando was like just
Central Florida
at that time. Right. For example. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's a great, great point you bring up, because when I started going to Florida about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, I've been to Florida, obviously, living in the East Coast. A lot of people from up north go down to Florida for vacation, whatever, nice weather. But you actually start going out into the wilderness, into the camping areas. Everyone thinks Florida is completely urbanized. Yes, there's a lot of that. The population has been booming, but a vast majority of the population is on either the East or West Coast. And then the only really big area is Orlando in the middle. You go south of Orlando, you got the Green Swamp. North of there, you've got the Ocala National Forest. You've got the Everglades and Big Cypress Preserves, which is like almost twice the size of Rhode Island, and it's all protected wilderness, basically. And we've spent extensive time in there in a bunch of different videos, and it's wild out there, man. So I don't think people realize how many wild areas there are in Florida and the extent of species found there. It's the only place where you have crocodiles and alligators living in the same place, in the far southern tip of Florida. And then you've got the Florida panthers, which are an indigenous species, one of the only eastern remnants of mountain lions in their native range on the eastern part of the U.S. that's still kind of officially around. So, it's a pretty wild place. But the stuff about some of those sightings, I mean, I've talked to people who had encounters in the outskirts of Miami areas. And, you know, we were even looking at stuff like the Bigfoot Mapping Project, and you can drive to that spot now and it's a subdivision. You know, 30, 40 years ago, that was a forest with wildlife. Even when we were in the corridor here, so this is north of Tampa, there's a whole bunch of data from John Green, who was one of the first researchers to look into the Sasquatch topic, as hopefully people know. He really was skeptical of the idea of Sasquatches existing anywhere outside of the Pacific Northwest. And I believe it was the 80s. He was invited down to Florida by a researcher down there and was actually shocked at the amount of habitat out there, especially then. I mean, Florida was like tens of millions of people less populated in the 70s and the 80s than it is today. So John Green went down there. He had a bunch of data. So we're sitting there in the corridor this past trip. And just north of us, in an area that's now basically developed, there's farms and there's homesteads and stuff out there. Well, 40, 50 years ago, there's a bunch of sightings that were all in that area because it just wasn't as developed. And it's just as people have spread out. So that's what's interesting about, especially in Florida, the amount of sightings that are now in areas that are, that habitat is dead. It's been destroyed. It's human habitation now. So yes, there are skunk ape sightings that allegedly took place there. But with that, all the other species that would have existed there have been pushed out or exterminated and pushed into other areas. So that's the issue you have in a place like Florida, because there's really nowhere else to go. You know, the coasts are completely controlled almost to the point of, you know, just millions and millions of people popping in even the past few years. Mm-hmm. So it's all kind of stuck in the middle. And obviously, you know what I'm talking about, having grown up there. But there's, you know, the you can get into some really deep and crazy places in Florida that kind of just surprise people. Like some of that footage I've shown people from the Everglades and from the Ocala National Forest or even the Green Swamp, they said, oh, wow, I never would have known that was Florida, because everyone's got this idea that it's all palm trees and beaches and Disney and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. If you drive Cocoa Beach, which is the area I grew up in, to Orlando, which is where Disney is, that's about an hour, 2 hour drive. You're going to drive through the vast majority of it being just swamp and forest and nothing. And it's all completely wild. I'm sure it's been developed more in the last few years, but I made that trip many, many times. And there's tons of space for there to be just about anything out there. Yeah. You look at it on a map and you think, oh, it's this tiny little state. We know what all's going on in there. We really have no idea. I promise you.
Yeah. It's an interesting place. I mean, again, having spent now 4 or 5 years in a row going down there every January, February, March, around that time period, seeing it. And we've gotten really deep into certain areas. Like I said, Ocala National Forest, the Everglades. It's beautiful. The nature out there is very unique for North America. I love it. I mean, I wouldn't want to be there when it's super humid, but it's a really cool area.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. With you on the humidity, though, that might be one of the reasons I left. Sandra has an interesting question. How do you build your tactical research teams?
I don't know if I really build them. It's just there's certain people that I know or trust, or I like the way that they kind of approach the topic. So that's how, you know, I don't know. In this case, this was just Matt Larson had invited a bunch of people he knew and trusted and extended the invite. And it was very controlled, I must say. It was like, hey, people were not vetted, but you know, he's not just going to invite anybody out there, right? Like, oh, it's a free for all.
Yeah, you want to go out in the woods with some rando who you don't know.
People you maybe don't know, right? It was people that were trusted and people that he had been out with before. So he'd been out with me before. He'd been out with people like Mike Ann, Max Powers, others, Eric Swanson, and, you know, somebody like Brian, somebody that I trust. So people know each other from online correspondences as well. So that's kind of how that formed. But I don't know, I guess tactical, you know, that's a question for Mike Ann, Tactical Bigfoot Research. How does he form? he's got the tactical side covered. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, he's great. But yeah, I don't know. It's just for me, it's more about if I think the person, you know, has either a certain skill set or just I like the way I think they would be an asset in the field. I mean, that's really kind of all that it comes down to. Do I know them? Do I trust them? Have I talked to them for a while? Do I know where they're at? Do I know they're not going to pull any crazy stuff? You know, that would be unexpected, that sort of thing. That's kind of how that, at least my thought process with that works.
Yeah. Are they going to drink a 12 pack of beer and ran fire gun wildly into the night?
Yes. That's not something we want out in the field when we're trying to be focused. And, you know, it's good to have a fun time. Obviously there's a lot of hilarious moments. I mean, you can see this episode. I tried to really showcase the embrace the suck moments, the moments where you are just caught in the rain and there's nothing you can do about it except laugh. that's about it. So it's not all fun and games and, you know, being super focused. There's obviously levity and there's bad moments and good moments and pretty much everything when you're out in the woods for multiple days in a row. That's just how it goes.
Yeah. Excuse me. That's one thing that I know our audience appreciates. And I'll just side note that I really appreciate about this series is that we do see everything. We see the whole process. We see the days where nothing happens. You know, I really enjoy it. So
that's always been the approach, I guess, with Beyond the Trail. So that's kind of what I've always kept it about. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Here's a fun question from Scott. Scott says, what do you believe the biggest takeaways from those who participated were then?
Well, I couldn't speak for everybody. For me, it was, this wasn't some super scientific expedition. Like, yes, we tried our best to be citizen scientists, and there was that amazing, I would call it almost a workshop by Mike Ann. That was like a 30-40 minute long presentation about evidence collection, how to step up our games, use these tools. And Mike has been one of the most innovative people I've gotten the chance to talk to the past few years. So it's been fantastic. And by the way, Mike is going to be doing a workshop at Monster Fest this year. So if you want to come and hang out with him live and have an awesome presentation like that, he's a genuinely good presenter. That's it. And you got to realize in the video, obviously I cut down out of like a 30 minute talk, I cut it into maybe 10 minutes or so. And he's very funny. He had a lot of, he did this thing where basically we were doing an experiment throughout the whole talk where he said, all right, when I say ready, set, go, doesn't matter when during the presentation, I want you all to get your phone out and try to take a picture of me before I say stop. So then, you're just listening to the talk, right? He's talking about have your tweezers, ready, set, go, stop. And nobody, of course, has their phones ready to go. And he's like, well, I'm an animal. I'm already gone in the brush. You didn't get a photo of me. And he would do that a few times. So that's kind of catches you off guard. It's like a, Simon Says kind of thing, which is really cool. So yeah, he's a great presenter. But takeaways. Yeah. I know there's a few people in the chat who were on the trip. Brian had said the mumbling, he was one of the guys on the two nights that experienced the mumbling, whatever that was. I mean, it could have been some kind of animal. We really don't know. Unfortunately, it wasn't really recorded. There's a recording on Max's phone that I tried to clean it up, but I couldn't really get much on there. So it depends who you ask, I guess, from the trip, what their takeaways were. Mine was, it was a great time. I think it's the essence of what a lot of going out in the woods with your friends are. You just have a good time. You trade ideas, trade concepts, even if it's not the most scientific expedition in the world, it's still a good time. And I think you can do these sorts of things, and there's nothing wrong with experimenting. And, I see a lot of people saying, oh, you're never going to get anything with that many people. It's like, well, how do you know that? Do you know that as a fact? I mean, you don't. So we're trying different techniques. We try this, we try that. I was really excited because I got to try out my saddle tree stand, which I've been working on since the fall, which is just basically, it's like what a lot of for hunting, where you're getting yourself up in the tree. And I'd always wanted to try that in Florida the past few years after going to Florida and saying, man, these environments, you get up in the trees and just sit there with a thermal, it's flat and you can kind of look over these savannas, these sort of prairies. So I really wanted to try in Florida. So it was really cool for me to be able to try that actually out there in the field, which was awesome. I'd only used it a few times before that up here, mostly practicing, going out in the woods, that sort of thing. This was a full, session of actually attempting to use it for the duration of the night. And that's what people also got to realize. I see a lot of comments saying, oh, you're never going to get anything being so noisy and loud. Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, this, you got to realize we're sitting out there at night for hours, right? Without cameras on, just the thermals, usually audio. And that's obviously condensed into the video. I mean, I'm not going to put a, 72 hour video on. I mean, no one's going to watch the whole thing, right? So it's condensed for the sake of viewing, obviously. If something happens, we'll let you know. I mean, there was one point I'm sitting in the tree for about an hour and I see something kind of bobbing on the thermal. And I included that in the, I included the thermal clip of that in the video, obviously, because I was just like, hey, this is what I observed while sitting in complete silence up in the tree and just hanging out. And that was the point of getting up into the tree, was to be able to survey like that. So the takeaways were, like I said, techniques, different stuff, good time with friends, what it's all about, getting out the woods and enjoying it. And hey, if we were to find something cool or extraordinary, obviously there's a follow-up to that. There's something we would try to collect, as with Mike was suggesting, his techniques. Use that and then pass it off to maybe somebody that has a little more expertise or might be able to help us identify stuff, or hair sample analysis. Stuff like the DNA study going on at North Carolina University with Professor Darby Orcutt. That's something you, as a citizen scientist, amateur researcher, can pass your stuff along to and let somebody with those credentials handle that. So, that was my takeaway, I suppose.
Michael Tovar actually has a follow-up comment about what you said about noise a moment ago. I think more noise, the better. It would attract curiosity. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, I mean, that's sometimes you got to try unconventional things. There's a lot of sightings and encounters that happen around campsites, and there seems to be a curiosity factor if that is what's going on. I mean, I don't know. But again, it's worth a try, right? Like you have all the people in one place where everyone just sit in camp and not do anything. It's just waste our time. Like we're gonna try out. And again, it might not work, and we're not claiming it is gonna work or be successful, but you don't know unless you try.
Well, in a lot of Sasquatch research, I mean, will involve the wood knocking techniques or, howling noises or stuff like that. So, there is some precedent for these creatures being stirred up or attracted to noise for one reason or another. So, yeah, I think Michael makes a good point. And I'm all about, I did this with Eli last week, but I'm all about poking at some of our recurring comments. I don't want to put anybody on blast, but I see stuff in
No,
there.
no,
I'm
I hear what you're saying.
gonna say something about this eventually. I'm gonna.
Don't make me
Here's a
do
great
it.
comment. Don't make me, don't make me. I do a lot of people fish by not responding to their comments. That's all I'm saying.
That's funny.
No, we're just messing around. But not really. Joe Mape says, just want to say thank you for all the hard work you all do. Thank you, Joe. We appreciate that. Thank you for watching. Nobody, if nobody
Thank you.
watches,
And I do gotta add, just obviously going out to these environments, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of manpower, as you saw, everyone involved in that expedition, putting in the hours. A lot of people drove, like Brian drove from up north. People are flying down. People, they could have gone to the beach and just hung out the entire time, Florida vacation style, but they chose to go out in the woods and try their luck and see what happens. So that's that, I've got to commend all the other guys and everyone involved for putting something like this together. Obviously, Matt or kind of organizing it, shepherding everybody. Oh my God, my cat just knocked something over. Oh, Braxy, what are you doing?
You go
It
check
was
on him.
loud enough that I could hear it over the headphones. Sorry, I got distracted.
I could hear it. Yeah, it wasn't like loud on my
Did
end,
you
but I
heard
could
that?
hear it.
Yeah. Oh, what is he doing?
Yeah, it sounded like a crashing sound effect from a movie.
Sound like he oh, he's
Like,
been climbing on the kitchen counter lately, and it's a pain.
no, I feel that. I have more cats than I should admit publicly. It's yeah,
I've just got the two, but
they be like
rascals.
that.
Yeah, that's can't control them, right? They're cats.
Yeah, and once you have so many, it's kind of like another one doesn't make a difference. But again, we don't want to talk about that. Thank you for that comment. We appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Joe.
Watch out for cats, also. Yeah.
We're talking about Florida Panthers. I'm like, I got my West Virginia Panther there running around, Braxy.
Scott says, "Love that your cat's name is Braxy." Yeah, that's a
Yeah, yeah.
fun trivia fact about Alex.
He was adopted from the Flatwoods Monster Museum, so he aptly had to be named Braxton, aka Braxy, after the Flatwoods Monster, Green Monster, the Flatwoods Monster. It's got so many different names, right? Braxy.
Yeah,
So
not
yeah.
many names. Alex's cat makes an appearance in an upcoming episode of UFOs Revisited. Not really. But we do talk about Braxy. Here's here's a quote from our friend Kaiju Ninja 85. There, see, right, oh well, yeah. I mean, I didn't even got
We've
my
got them. We've got the Braxies.
this was from Strange Fellows. They sent it
Oh, I
to us
love
as a
it.
gift when my son was born. Yeah,
Yeah,
so
they've
it's
got these
technically
guys
his,
all
but.
in the Flatwoods Monster Museum there in
Those things
Boys.
are iconic.
They are. They're like a supposed to be a candle holder or a lantern. Really cool.
They remind me of
Anyway.
the old school Marmot Godzilla figures, which our friend Kaiju Ninja 85, I'm sure, knows what that means. And see how I did that? I wrapped it back around again. Kaiju Ninja 85 asks, "Has Max been able to get that audio off his phone?"
So I have the clip of it, right? And I played it during the video. I tried to clean it up, but they're just what happened was I guess he wasn't able to save it or something. So Mike Ann had recorded it on his phone from Max's phone. So it create, there's just you couldn't really hear anything. That was the unfortunate part. I wish there was more that could have been done. Obviously, like the issue is too, some teams are not weren't as prepared as others in terms of having gear and stuff. Because you've got 26 people running around. Not everyone has the same exact loadouts. And you know, it's a good moment to remind people, because I've made mistakes too with audio, not have audio rolling, that kind of thing. Like what Chris Spencer stresses a lot, and I definitely take after him, and I love his audio approach. Have your audio running as soon as you leave the car, or in this case, maybe you leave camp. Just run audio. I mean, there's even a video there of Matt. He had a beanie, and he attaches his mic to the back, his Zoom H1. And I kind of run mine usually on a backpack or make sure somebody is running it. But you know, it's unfortunate that we were not able to get that audio. I really wish we could have, but it was weird. The two nights, two teams, you know, had that going on. So, yeah.
There are a lot of limitations with, I mean, any kind of documentation in the field, but audio especially, because it's like, you know, even just producing podcasts for STM, I have to control the environment so much to get 5 good minutes of audio down, you know? So try to do that in the field. You can't, like, you know, it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and again, it's different types of preparation and different, everyone's got different gear they're running and that kind of stuff. We're not claiming any of this stuff with Sasquatch. It was just, that was the weirdest stuff that happened, right? I mean,
yeah,
people have theories. Oh, but was it like ghost type stuff? I mean, we've heard all kinds of theories. Maybe it was just some weird bird or animal that we're not familiar with. It's all possible, but obviously getting to the bottom of it would be interesting. It's just funny that both teams, both nights, thought it was just us. Like, that's one of the reasons I think the first night the guys didn't even record it, because they're like, oh, dude, these bozos are walking up on us and they didn't even tell us, because we had pretty good communication lines throughout the whole night. So we weren't just going to walk up on a different team and just stumble around. You know, we wanted to coordinate things. So that's what, you know, I guess that's, they were probably ticked off thinking, oh, it's one of these idiots coming over here. And it turned out not to be. So we don't know what it was, but I thought it was interesting that they both all four people who heard it kind of all assumed it was a person or something like that at first, or something along those lines, which is kind of odd, but that doesn't mean anything. You know, it could be some other creature. It could be something. Obviously we want to go through the motions and determine what it would be without making a bold claim that it's definitely something unusual. Right.
Yeah. But it's what happened while you were,
that's what happened. Like
it's just a fact, you know?
Yeah. And we're just documenting what happened on that trip. And that is what happened two nights. I mean, we didn't make that up. That is genuinely what happened. You can talk to any of those four guys, including one who's not even into the Bigfoot topic, who experienced this stuff. And you know, Brian is somebody that I know and trust, and he's not just somebody that just jumps at everything. You know, he just thought it was a weird thing that he had heard, and he can probably talk about it better than I can, because I didn't hear it. I was in a tree while it was going on, and you know, I was kind of immobile. I couldn't really get out for a while, because the idea was just sit in the tree. Yeah.
And once you're up there, you're up there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of effort to get up. So I want to use it up. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in that humidity. Here's a fun question from Scott. Something I was curious about. Do you think this is a type of event/expedition that would happen again?
Maybe. I don't know about in that area in particular. I think Matt is not going to be in that area any longer. I'm sure other people could take up the mantle. This kind of stuff has happened before. This is obviously not the first time this kind of idea has been tried. I don't think it's tried a lot anymore from what I can tell in the sort of Bigfoot research world. I hear the vacuum cleaner going off. Something definitely happened out there with the cat.
I thought it was a robot. I just was like, whoa, robot.
No, that, robot house. Somebody either threw up or somebody broke something. So I'm sorry. I'm just hearing this all in the background. It's so loud I can hear it over my headphones. But yeah, back to topic. Like I said, I think this is something that could definitely happen. I mean, anybody could really organize this kind of thing. It's totally informal. It's just, you know, get a group of people together. If you can get 26 to 30 people together, that's a task unto itself. Yeah, it's just a lot of fun. I know that there are groups, BFRO, whatever, people that do this kind of stuff pretty regularly, or I don't know, semi-regularly, but they're kind of known for doing that sort of thing. But yeah, this is just go out camping with, you know, 10 of your best Bigfooting friends or whatever. And that's, you've kind of got it going on. There's no secret formula.
You've done it. You've organized
it. Anybody can do it. You know, some people charge for that kind of stuff, but no, this was just a fun get together. Everyone, like, bring your own resources and, you know, just a kind of collaborative effort. So yeah.
Awesome. Very cool. Yeah. I like the idea that, like you said, anybody can do this. You know, people, I think sometimes we watch these documentaries and they're like, man, how do I do that? You just do it. Just go do it. Just go. There's right. no certificate board. Just get out there. Listen, watch.
Yeah.
You know,
the citizen it. Science love aspect it. Is very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's another question from Sandra. I've been to the Everglades, but it's mostly traversed by boat/airboats. Very true. So how would a skunk ape live there in your opinion? And that's an interesting question because we're talking about, you know, presumably an ape-like creature in a very
right.
not aquatic environment, but, you know, a very damp environment where you do,
yeah.
you know, like I mentioned earlier, these vast stretches where you're driving across swamps and stuff. So that's an interesting question.
This is something I thought about quite a bit, especially a couple of years ago when we first did our trek to the Everglades and all these habitats in between. We're standing there in the Everglades and in the big cypress, and we're kind of like, man, why would something like this, something primate-like, hairy, why would it want to live in an environment like this? You know, how would it get used to this sort of thing? And then we saw a black bear across the road. You know, we found Florida panther footprints. And you're like, oh, but these animals are not semi-aquatic. They don't have webbed feet. They don't have any weird adaptations to that environment. You could take a black bear from Florida and a black bear from Alaska, and they're part of the same species. They have a regional adaptation to their environment, right? Bears in northern places hibernate. In Florida, they don't really need to hibernate. In the south, they just kind of go in this slow down torpor or something like that is the term. It's like a slower metabolic state where they don't need to eat as much, but they're still active. I mean, we've cast black bear footprints in Florida in January. They're still running around. Again, you got the panthers. You can take a Florida panther, which is just a mountain lion, compared to a mountain lion that lives in Arizona or one that lives in British Columbia. Same species, different adaptations. One lives at 5,000 feet up in the mountains and hunts elk, whereas in Florida, they're obviously going after whitetails and other smaller critters. So I thought to myself, you know, it wouldn't make sense for something ape-like to live here. But then you see all these other creatures that you find in other areas where Sasquatches are reported, and it's the same kind of story. So they get smaller in the South as well. You know, the one we saw across the road in Big Cypress was like a little dog. I mean, it was a little black lab kind of looking thing compared to the ones I have even here in my yard in New Hampshire. You know, we get some big boys, especially when they come out of hibernation. They're chonks. I mean, it's hilarious to see. They're very angry and hungry at that point. But so you have different, yeah, you've got different, you know, and they've actually even they've taken black bears from Canada and repopulated areas in like the Ozarks and the Wichitas in Oklahoma. And even though those bears there wouldn't have a need to hibernate, they ancestrally hibernate because they've been taken from one place to another. It takes them a while to adapt. So yeah, that's kind of the idea that, you know, how something would traverse. Again, all these other animals are doing it. We saw tons of white-tailed deer. We saw all the other normal kind of forest critters. You'd seen a deciduous temperate forest like we have in the Appalachians. They were existing in parts of Florida. They just have a lot of other unique species to down there, reptiles, amphibians, that kind of thing as well. So yeah, I toyed with the idea for a bit, but I think the bigger issue in Florida and in certain places in the South is encroachment and habitat loss than could they exist in areas like this. If the eyewitness reports are true, then, you know, that they are. I mean, again, it's very similar characteristics to sightings in other parts of the country or other parts of North America. Yet, like I said, the bigger issue I would imagine in a place like Florida is just simply encroachment.
Yeah. And primates do live in these humid, you know, rainforest-like environments, places like the rainforest. And
most other primate species on Earth, yeah. And, you know, there are examples of escaped monkeys in parts of Florida that live out there and, you know, they thrive in that environment because it's semi-tropical. It never really gets that cold in Florida.
No. Everybody puts on parkas when we hit 60 degrees and then it rains for 2 weeks and then you're back in flip-flops. That's just the way it goes. My buddy in the audience here, Hike with Mike, knows what I'm talking about. Great for Mike. Black bears are small in Florida as they are mammals. In Florida, our mammals are small, but our reptiles are huge. Can copy that.
Yes. Big gators. I mean, I remember even some of the deer down there. I'm like, oh, that's really cute because our whitetails up here in the north they have that thick winter coat that they put on. So they just poof out during the winter months.
Yeah,
Florida's an artiste.
Yeah, big birds too. I don't know if you ran into any sandhill cranes.
Yeah, oh, tons of sand. In Ocala, we had them outside our tent, you know, in the national forest, and they're just like these dinosaur-looking things walking around, just letting that squawking out. But yeah, that's Bergman's rule, where you have, you know, the further north you go, the larger the animals get. For whatever reason, you get closer to the equator. From what I understand, a lot of the skunk ape sightings, they're of a smaller stature, maybe less bulky than in certain areas, in, say, the northern kind of climates.
Very interesting. Yeah.
At least anecdotally. Yeah.
Florida animals are just weird in general, but yeah.
Florida's like the Australia of North America. That's what I call it.
I was thinking the same thing earlier. No, not even lying. Ask my dad if you ever meet him. We had a nest of eastern coral snakes in our house when I was a child. We encountered, yep, I think, six separate specimens. Those are highly poisonous. And my sister and I were all like age 9 and below. And that's just how it be in Florida.
Yeah. It's a crazy place.
That's just how it be. I got
the memes are real. Yeah. Florida man, everything. Yeah. Florida man's, it's like the Crocodile thing. Dundee of U.S. Of the U.S. kind of.
Yeah, but in a bad way. Yeah, it's no disrespect to anybody in Florida.
It's humorous.
I got a lot of love for you guys, but yeah, no, I see you. I know where you live. Well, speaking of regional differences in species and things of that nature, Christine Gunter says, with differences in colors, size, hair, etc. in people's sightings, do you believe there could be multiple species? What about other cryptids? Same thing. Crazy happenings in GSMs. I'm not sure what GSMs is. Maybe Alex knows. I'm
Great
sorry.
Smoky Mountains, maybe?
Oh, probably.
That's Mike's best guess.
That would make sense. I'm just thinking about Florida. Yeah, that kind of ties to what you were saying a moment ago, Alex, about possibly regional adaptations and things.
Yeah, that's what I would guess make the most sense to me logically. I don't, because once you start talking about, oh, there's 3-4 different types of Sasquatch that are living in North America, it's like that. To me, that stretches believability a little bit. I would imagine it's just, again, because you have, we talked about the panthers or the black bears. They're the same animal. They're just adapted to so many different environments. Black bear, I think, are one of the most widely distributed animals in North America, aside from humans, right? When we're talking about mammals, specifically mammals. I think in general, they are one of the most widely distributed animals because they exist in, you know, their range is almost to the Arctic in parts of Alaska and Canada. And then they're also in areas in the Southwest. And then obviously the swamps of the South. And you know, we saw one in Big Cypress, which is less than 20 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, that is as far south as you can get from near the Arctic Circle in Alaska. So that's a very interesting kind of adaptation. And yeah, panthers or mountain lions, pumas, cougars, there's, I believe in North America, there's only really one subspecies or one species. And South, they're also found in South America in some of those areas, and there's different subspecies and that sort of thing, but they're still basically the same animal. So that would make most sense to me. Yeah, so it's just, there's like a subspecies is as far as I would go. I wouldn't call it a separate species. That would just, you start losing me there with that kind of talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cause I mean, you know, we see canines, like how many different breeds of dog right. are there? They're all basically the same species, but they look distinctly different. They often behave distinctly differently, but under a microscope, yeah, they're all basically the same thing. That's why they can never mix and cross.
That's the same thing with humans, right? I mean, human beings, we are all the same, but you go to talk to pygmies in Africa who are, you know, very, very short people, even on the same continent, then go to talk to the Maasai in Kenya, who are these giants, right? Basically, they're the ones that do a lot of the marathon running. They live in the same continent and they're all Africans, but they're so different because one lives in a very subtropical environment where being tall isn't really beneficial. And the other one live in a more savanna plain type area. And you go to talk to people live in Arctic areas, right? Go to the Scandinavian countries, talk to Inuits, people in far east of Russia, and then talk to people that live closer to the equator. People tend to be a little smaller towards the equator. They get taller as they, some of those Norwegian people and those Icelandic people are just giants, right? So that, and we're all still humans. We just live in such different environments. And obviously we're all intermingled and mixed now, but you know, the way most people adapted was to their environments, right? And it's a lot easier to exist in a warmer area than in some of those brutal deserts or brutal cold places. So, you know, you see the adaptations, and I think humans are one of the most adaptable and widely found species on the planet. I mean, they're all over the place. Yeah. We literally live everywhere.
Yeah. We're the just only about. Species that does that. Yeah. To that degree. Great question.
Especially for a mammal and a primate. Yeah. We, you know, all the other primates are very specialized to different areas, primarily tropical or subtropical. And then if Sasquatch exists, it's reported at least in quite a few different biomes in North America that are very different, but share similarities. You know, they're not seen in cornfields in Iowa or Death Valley as much as they are in wooded areas around the continent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're like the only species that goes, this environment's great, but let me just move to one that's way less hospitable.
Yeah.
Where it's way too hot. Everybody in Texas.
I think it's just at one spite time. Or the human need to prove a point. Like, yeah, I'm gonna yeah. thrive here.
I'm going to make myself miserable and everybody's right. going to respect me. come close to the top of the hour, but we'll oh, we have a new squad member. Oh wow, welcome Sweet. To the squad. Moania 0780, thank you so much Hello. For joining the squad. We appreciate you. Yeah,
very wow. cool.
I love when that happens during a show. I get so excited. I'm like, awesome, we said something that somebody didn't hate somewhere. That's great. Hike with Mike asks, did you go to school in Clearwater? No, Hike with Mike, but my mom did. I grew up in Brevard mm-hmm. County. So just knock that one out real quick. Joe Mapes says and asks, I've seen that wild non-Bigfoot apes do inhabit Florida due to zoo releases decades ago. Any truth in these reports? I can say that those are longstanding rumors kind of all over Florida.
Yeah.
But there are documented examples of apes escaping from research facilities and from zoos, which is kind of an inevitability, you know, in an environment like
hurricanes.
There are cases where hurricanes, yeah, I mean, it's Hurricane Alley, you know. So there are cases where that has happened and where specimens have not been recovered. How many of those stories are true versus how many are urban? I couldn't tell you. There is some truth to that. Yeah.
Well, you know, the documented case that is absolutely true is in Silver Springs, right outside the Ocala National Forest, you have a few hundred rhesus macaque monkeys that actually exist that were used in a lot of old movies back in the day. And there was like a swamp tour in the river, and they had an island with monkeys. And what did the monkeys do? They left the island and they swim around. So if you go to Silver Springs, and Mike Ann and I actually went there after we filmed this corridor video for a day trying to find the monkeys, but I guess they were hiding. There were too many people. Everyone was down there on spring break, but you've got videos. Look up Silver Springs monkeys. They're known to have hepatitis B, actually, I believe. Some of these monkeys, so they can actually be dangerous. There's videos of them terrorizing people's picnics, you know, jumping guys kayaking, and all the monkeys will suddenly jump into the water and start swimming at them. Monkeys can be jerks. They exist in that environment. They live there because it's conducive enough for them to do so. So you know, you could have a chimp or something that escaped from some research facility. Theoretically, we'd be able to survive just fine in that kind of environment. And that's why Florida has a lot of these escaped or exotic animals that have been able to thrive in that environment. So as opposed to other places where they'd probably die out due to the climate.
Yeah. Planet of the Apes is happening in Florida right now.
Yes.
It's reality. No, I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. Oh, man. One more question before we wrap for the night, folks. Let's see. I really like this question from Kaiju Ninja 85. Alex, why do you think all kinds of Sasquatch around the country/world seem to have the same kind of mindset/instinct to be elusive and hide from being discovered?
That's a good question. I mean, obviously, I have no idea. My best guess would be if they are some kind of a species, they have rates like a lot of other species, whether that's something that's innately kind of programmed into them to be elusive, I don't know. You look at mountain lions anywhere, Florida panthers, Pacific Northwest, wherever they exist, they're all pretty much elusive. They don't like being seen. They rarely reveal themselves, only under specific circumstances. So that's just a species thing. I don't know, but it seems like in all the areas that Sasquatches are reported in, they share a lot of characteristics. Even the sightings that do happen seem to be coincidental, chance, a curiosity factor, kind of messing with people in camps, maybe around their houses. That's just, again, that's all anecdotal, but if I had to guess, I'd say if you're talking about a species, they're going to have some shared kind of characteristics, regardless of where they are. I mean, you have mountain lions in very remote environments in Canada, where they really have no threat of even running into people. Yet the moment a person comes in an area, they are gone. They maybe even never run into a person before, but they know somehow to stay away from it. Whether that's something that they are taught or they just kind of are programmed with, I don't know. I don't know enough about some of these species and animals. And animals in general tend to be more scared of humans than the other way around. Most animal species, regardless, fear humans for the most part. So I don't know. It's a good question. I don't have an answer. I can only speculate because so much of this stuff is speculative. So your guess is as good as mine, Tristan.
Well, and you could guess too, if we're talking about a primate species, it would have developed or evolved alongside human beings. And if we're asking, I mean, what's the dominant species on planet Earth? It's a pretty simple, you know, so it could be like an evolutionary survival trait that's adapted, because like these creatures now know, okay, stealth is going to get me further in force. Like, you know, if I go out arm swinging, these things have tools, there's more of them, they're going to kill me versus hiding. You know, it could just be a naturally adapted trait.
Yeah, I mean, look at what we do to environments. You know, humans show up, bad things start happening, entire forests get cut down. You know, animals can adapt pretty quickly to pressures in their environments, especially from human beings. I mean, there's evidence, I think, like elk and deer can adapt within a generation or two to a lot of pressure. So something more intelligent than a deer or an elk obviously probably could recognize, hey, this probably isn't too good for me. I should, you know, move further into my habitat, or I have to be more careful. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting question. It gets, that takes us down the whole line of like, what are they, and the nature of trying to put it in a frame of reference that we can understand. It's a great question. Yeah. Tristan always has a good question.
I think, you know, and this is the tendency we as humans like to anthropomorphize animals. We try to understand from our perspective, why would animals do things? You got to understand that they have a completely different outlook, what their priorities and what they do. They don't think like a human in terms of these sorts of things. They just do. And primates, a little bit more interesting on that spectrum, because they obviously reason and probably think more than other creatures due to increased brain capacity. But it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I just saw a comment. Sorry, this is a little off topic, but I just saw a comment from Mike Hamilton that he is in a Sasquatch hotspot in Brevard County, which I would love to know more about. So Mike and anyone else who has a question, comment, anything, please shoot an email to Aaron at smalltownmonsters.com. I always love hearing from you guys. So, well, Alex, we've reached another hour. We've done another episode of the show. Thank you so much for hanging out.
Always goes by so quick, right?
It does. Well, I'm sure you'll be back. I know you've got a ton of stuff in the works right now, so we will I'm sure do this again. But in the time, have a great evening. Be safe, be happy.
Thank you, man.
And et cetera, so forth.
Looking forward to a lot of cool strange places stuff coming up. So
yeah,
it'll be fun to talk about all that.
Heck yeah. We will be back for sure. So, well, thank you everybody for hanging out with us. Thank you for your comments and questions. We will be back next week, same time, same place, no schedule variations this week. Definitely check out all the new stuff we've got coming up, all the announcements we dropped at the start of the hour, and you can follow us on all the socials for updates and news and more Alex Petikoff. Who doesn't need more Alex Petikoff? I definitely do. All right. Good night, everybody.
See you guys.
Presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, and Monster Fest 2 at smalltownmonsters.com.